to episode 46 of the Pipe and Slippers Football Podcast. I am your host, Roger Kirby, and sat next to me, this very special edition, is Mr. Stephen Rick.
A very special edition. Yes, good evening, everyone. And this is our third now podcast we've done side by side. Or just the second. We were going to do one up at yours recently, but
never really got around to it. No. Definitely is number two. Last time we were allegedly a bit giddy, so
this is a very casual environment. You're on the sofa.
I am. It's very comfortable. We've got all forms of electronic equipment, so we're currently using far too much electricity. And
you can never have too many screens.
This is true. Redis feels thoroughly underprepared. Story of his life, but we'll give it a go. NFL draft in the books. We're on to rookie mini camps, but I think we need to touch on this this draft that's just gone.
Yes, indeed. It was. We're recording now on Tuesday night in the UK, so 3 days removed from the final of the 2016 draft, which managed to catch quite a bit of it live despite the time zone issues. So it was good. Your overall kind of take from the draft as it unfolded?
Yeah, it was good. I think in a strange kind of way, we got spoiled with the trades, and that actually decreased the tension on draft night. But the build-up was fantastic. And then, obviously, the whole Aaron Tunsil thing that we'll touch on. And, you know, the fact that Miles Jack, for example, slid out of the first round completely. There was a few things that you weren't expecting. And some interesting bits and pieces. But I think we're going to try and tackle this in some sense of order. So we're going to start with the AFC East.
He's the nearest to us. Yep. Try and go division by division. So obviously, the Dolphins really were the team that had Tunsil fall on their lap after that controversy and the videos. I really think probably in that division, that's where we should start with what happened there with Tunsil and how that affected what happened during that first round. Obviously terrible timing for that all to come out, but it comes down to whether that was a good pick for the Dolphins based on a few things that have happened there. The Sue situation, there's team rumblings, is Gase and the management strong enough to deal with that kind of character issues, or whether they just took what they thought was still a steal of the best player available. But
you can't argue that they took the best player available on the board at the time. I have less concern with him smoking pot per se, because the climate in the States is a lot different over here, and he seems to have passed all his drug testing prior to the draft and all the rest of it. So in that regard, I'm less concerned about that. My issue is more about that he's clearly got people who he's either made enemies now, rightly or wrongly. But I can understand as a GM why you would want to take him off your board, and I also think what it has caused, it caused a few people to in draft rooms around to not think quick enough on the feet, and there's one team that I think overthought it a little bit, for example, from the AFC South, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, well, I think it almost seemed as well. There was a few guys and teams later on that then almost overspent on linemen, bizarrely. I don't know if that was any fallout of Tunsil and other linemen not going where they were. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Tunsil fits into the Dolphins system. I mean, you were talking earlier to me about the fact that Gase has got a different kind of system in place for the rookies coming in as well.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he's he doesn't sound as if he's going to send them out onto the field and just slog them. You know, these guys have, you know, done a hard slog from the college year. They've gone through 4 months of whether that be combine, pro days, interviews, stress and all of that that goes with it of, you know, essentially, you know, trying to impress people to, you know, it can cost you millions of pounds. I mean, that's probably cost Tunstall in the region of, what, 6, 7, 8 million potentially?
Yeah, somewhere in that region.
Which is, you know, okay, he's an instant millionaire overnight, but it's still, it's a considerable amount of money. So it's stressful. And I think, you know, getting these guys' heads in the playbook, also teaching them some life skills, you know, financial planning, you know, nutrition, you know, all the rest of it, and trying to get these guys immersed in your program. I've got a lot of time for Gaze. I worry about the old Dolphins as in terms of their mentality and what they, who they are and what they stand for, but I've got a lot of time for Gaze. So I think in this instance, I'm kind of prepared to give them a bit of a pass. Excuse me, that's my...
That's too many devices and screens on the go.
As my good lady wife. Saying goodnight to me, so I better reply back. So I'm going to let you filibuster while we potentially move on to...
Yes, life goes on as we try to record. But, yeah, we'd look at the Dolphins as an overall, their picks. Kenyon Drake as a running back, third round. Real good prospect there. Many talk that he's going to be the better all-round running back coming out of Alabama compared to Henry. And obviously you're trying to address some... options with wide receivers in rounds 3 and 6, extra wide receivers to try and give Tannehill something to play with. You've given him Tunsil, a running back, wide receivers, a Gase offense, and a real steal in a real potential guy with a huge ceiling in Thomas Duarte at tight end in the 7th round, when most were talking he was a 2nd or 3rd tight end before the draft started. But so you've given him a lot of offensive weapons. That the Dolphins, it's almost like, yeah, you've got to give Tannehill time to adjust to a new system. But that said, with all of those things in place, it's kind of now or never for Tannehill to really make a leap and see what he does with this around him. And they're giving him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, the Tannehill thing is obviously key to where they move. And he's going to take them potentially as far as they will go. You know, they've got a lot of money invested elsewhere. But... yeah, I think it was a solid draft for them, and I like the fact that they didn't really overthink it a little bit. I mean, at the end of the day, this guy was talked as, you know, 2 weeks ago, if the guys hadn't drafted up, is the consensus number one pick in the draft. So, yeah, what can you say?
Moving on, let's go. Should we go way up north into Buffalo? And the Bills, and Rex took a guy from where his son plays at Clemson.
And I think that's the operative word. Rex took a guy. Yeah. I think this has got Rex Ryan blueprints all over it, as opposed to Doug Whaley. I think much in the same way that Rex got his way in the draft room in New York, he seems to have got his way in Buffalo. Against what was a disappointing season last year.
Yeah, it promised so much, and you thought with what Rex was taking over in Buffalo, you expected more from that defense. But clearly some of the guys didn't fit his way of doing things and taking time. But the first three picks all on the defensive side of the ball, with Raglan at pick 41 when he was talked about potential kind of top 15 region. And then also another lineman in Washington from Ohio in the 3rd round, really filling that defensive side of the ball with good quality. Rex has got some toys to play with now. And then obviously the next thing to really look at there is they're still trying to find somebody. They're not 100% on Taylor. They're going to give Cardale Jones. It's a nice developmental guy to have when you've got Taylor is serviceable and he can do things. Emmanuel, if you're really desperate, can still come in and fill a role. But Jones has got good upside if they don't have to play him straight away.
Yeah, and with Taylor, it, obviously they haven't ironed out a new contract going forwards with him. So potentially you could have Tyrod Taylor and EJ Manuel. Okay, Emmanuel hasn't exactly worked out, but both of those could be hitting the exit door. Mm-hmm. And I can't see the Bills wanting to pay Tyrod Taylor franchise tag money next offseason. So, yeah, watch this space with Jones. It's going to be an interesting one, without a doubt.
Yeah, but the Bills addressing the defense, and potentially the Ryan brothers can achieve something on that side of the ball to what they didn't really do last year. Yeah. From what they promised.
And I liked it on the whole, I have to say. I don't think, again, I don't think they overthought it. And I think the winners of these drafts tend to be the teams that stay true to their board, as opposed to, you know, drafting for need.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, just obviously, you look at this time of year, we're analysing the draft. Everyone's chucking out draft grades. We can have our own kind of issues and rants with those. It's so early to be grading in that sense. But, and you look at things like NFL.com thinks that the needs for the Bills were O-line, but they didn't actually take any. So you wonder what's going to happen there in terms of the analysis that these websites and people are doing. But from just an overall perspective, it looks like a nice haul.
Yeah, and it's subjective, isn't it? Yeah. So
as we move on, down to the Jets, we shall leave the fourth team until they get their second round pick. They never had one in the Patriots. So the Jets, a couple of linebackers, Lee and Jenkins, nice picks for them when they've got good guys at the front of their line, but fill in that second level.
Yeah, and they struggle to generate decent pass rush in that second level. And it should allow them to bring pressure in different ways this year, which will be interesting with Todd Bowles. Obviously, the huge talking point was the second round pick of Christian Hackenberg.
Well, these are the things. If you took this draft kind of 8 months or so ago, that's not a bizarre pick at all. He was rated a lot higher a year or so ago.
2 years ago as a freshman, he was, you know, a certain number, consensus number one pick, and he was going to be transcendent star.
He struggled with accuracy more than anything, despite the fact he's got all the attributes and physique to be a top quarterback, and he can throw. He's got a live arm, they say. He can throw with ease. He can make all the throws, but accuracy on those throws is the issue. And more just the situation that they have now created and what it's that quarterback room.
I personally like him as a player in the sense that in the pro-style offense that Bill O'Brien was running at Penn State in his freshman year, they put a lot on him and he was successful in it. Now, the concern is why has he regressed? And obviously Bill O'Brien leaving the program was had a huge negative influence. There seems to be certain other issues in terms of O-line and that's potentially affected his mechanics. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. You know, you could go on about that. But to take him with a second-round pick when you've spent a fourth-round pick last year on Bryce Petty, you are still trying to, you know, cajole Fitzpatrick into a one-year deal. And there's now even talk that Fitzpatrick might throw the toys out the pram and just say, well, I'm not playing football next year. You know, you got to remember this is a guy that you can't imagine needs cash. You know, he signed a $60 million contract with the Buffalo Bills. And he's been working on sort of $5 million one-year deals over the last 3 or 4 years. So maybe he just turns around and says, go, you know, be my guest, go for it.
You see, if they, whoever they just know a little bit more about the situation that they know they're not actually going to get fits, that there's no way they're going to be able to work out something, then it makes sense that they're getting in another guy. But at the same time, as you just said, second round pick is high. You look at all the other quarterbacks taken. The way that this guy fell in the last couple of years, you could have picked him up probably 2 or 3 rounds later. I don't see that he was talked about as coming out before Prescott and Cardale Jones, even Cody Kessler had more hype prior to the draft. And he's been taken so high, it seems like quite a high pick to waste. in that sense. But you don't want to ride the Geno coaster if you're not.
No, and also Changeli has had a hell of a lot of success in terms of getting the best out of quarterbacks that you wouldn't necessarily say are world beaters by a long stretch of imagination. So watch this space, but I think it's going to be some interesting quarterback developments in New York, because obviously Fitzpatrick, if he comes back, is only going to come back on a 1-year deal.
And then just to round off the Jets, they took a lineman, a tackle from South Carolina to try and put some depth there, see what happens. Took another cornerback in round 4, Justin Burris. So, but those two linebackers could make quite an influence if they can get up to speed in the Bowls defense. And we shall watch this space with the quarterback situation. But if you're trying to give grades, a lot of people are giving them a lesser grade based on the Hackenberg situation. But that's where we are with the Jets. Moving on to the Patriots, who, despite not having a first round pick, still had more picks than most with all their comp picks, if I get my words wrong.
Yeah, comp picks, and obviously they took another second rounder from the trade of Jones.
And they actually moved back from that trade to take an extra third round pick, I believe. But they went cornerback first. The guy is a 5'10" cornerback, which potentially he's going to play more nickel.
That's what I'm saying.
And a good fit inside there. And then they addressed the line with a guard from NC State, Thurney, in round 3. And they did something in round 3, which you often never hear a word said about. They take another quarterback almost year after year, and because you've got Brady, and Brady never grumbles about it.
And Belichick gets a massive pass because of Belichick. I mean, I personally don't like it. I understand that it's a constant thing about making sure that you potentially draft a QB and you get value. You know, a bit maybe, you know, even if it's
business sense, yeah, in many aspects.
And we don't know when Brady is going to drop off a cliff, and you know, it could be anytime soon. You know, he is in that window. He seems to be drinking something that that no one else is drinking, because he seems to have been sipping from the fountain of youth. But yeah, when you think that realistically, that team could have done with you know, using that pick to really help help them out now. You know, could they have taken Hoyer? And Hoyer's ended up signing with the Bears, yeah. But you know, he would have.
They seemingly like the option though, that obviously Garoppolo is third year now. He's only 1 year away from potentially moving on if Brady keeps going. They like to keep that cycle going, that then Brissett will be into year 2 by the time they might move on from Garoppolo, and keep it revolving in the backup situation. So it's not bad in that sense, but as you said, it's a third round pick, despite the fact they had 3 third round picks. Seemed a bit high to keep taking something.
Given the fact that Brady is suspended for 4 games this time round, which is looking like it's going to happen, yeah. If Garoppolo performs half decent in these 4 games, bearing in mind that you've got a 7-game starter with hardly any starts since leaving high school, earning £18 million a year. Okay, I know it's a two-year deal essentially, and the Texans have it out. But somebody might be prepared to overpay for Garoppolo in terms of a draft pick. And they, as you say, they have they now have Brissett. That's how you pronounce this.
Brisket.
Anything about food. it's interesting, and obviously the Patriots get a pass because they're the Patriots.
Yeah. I mean, then you look through, they then really had a number of 6th and 1/7th round pick. These type of guys we don't know too much about. They've got a whole mixture of defense and offense players. So as an overall grade, as always with the Patriots, a lot of these guys may come good and they can fit the system.
I think in terms of, we think about the fantasy implications of this in a dynasty league, I think Malcolm Mitchell will be a nice pickup for somebody. He seems a smart, intelligent guy that's going to fit in nicely.
Slippery athlete, as he is called on NFL.com.
So we'll stay in the AFC because I have a sneaking suspicion that we'll probably only get round to covering the AFC today. We might end up having to split this podcast into two because we are going off on a deep dive. I don't think anyone's going to want to consume a 3-hour podcast.
Let's try and speed this up, but
yeah, good luck with that.
Right.
You're going to go to seventh round pick every single time. We're going to be here all night. Right, stay in the AFC. Come on, pick a team.
Let's go Bengals. Let's go north. That's strange. So they went cornerback with William Jackson III, seemingly.
You don't have to do it by speaking faster. That's not going to help people.
It will. You can put it on the 1.5 speed and we'll get there.
So you're speaking at 1.5 speed and they're going to listen to it at 1.5. So yeah. Essentially, it's speed 3.
Excellent. I like it. Let's go with it. So, the Bengals. I think the one thing that sticks out for me, obviously they took kind of best player available. They always do at their situation. One of the steals is round 4, Andrew Billings.
Yeah.
Who was a real brute in
DJ had him inside his top 50, I think, on his big board, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously very specific to certain defensive systems as a nose tackle. Not all teams will play those type of guys, but he's a big, big brute to have inside. So that's a nice pickup there.
He won't turn 21 until March 2016. So, he's just turned 21.
Yeah, but over 310 pounds, so that's a good interior lineman for them. And cornerback help, which is good for the Bengals, because...
I know they've re-signed Pac-Man Jones, but, he's probably got a season, two seasons tops. I think it was interesting that they didn't take a wide receiver until round 6. With Cody Core there, but I anticipated that they might be in with the Houston Texans, the Vikings, and Washington in that sort of little run on wide receivers. I was surprised that they didn't try and make a move, especially seeing that they've got AJ Green locked up, but they lost Jones and Sanu in free agency.
Yeah, that's the one need that they really needed to hit, but. Not many other names there that I'm too familiar with, so I won't like to reserve too much judgment.
And I think, again, the Bengals are another team that get a bit of a pass because they have a nice history of drafting and developing players, and as much as Marvin Lewis has struggled to win that playoff game, he's done a hell of a job, him and his staff. He's got a nice coaching tree out there. And they seem to be a team that drafts, develops, and is constantly in the mix in that what is one of the toughest divisions in the National Football League.
To win your division, you've got to take on your division rivals, and going cornerback obviously is a good need when they come up against the Ravens and the Steelers, who obviously have a high-powered offense with their wide receivers, despite the Bryant suspension, but cornerback for the Bengals is good to protect against those Steelers and Brown, but the Steelers themselves went double cornerbacks in the first two picks with Artie Burns and Sean Davis. So I think we saw yesterday Coach Tomlin asking if he's excited to have these for his DB coach, but no, he's got a lot of work to do because he's got two top picks to try and make something of, and almost the pressure on to get them to perform and get in the team. And
And maybe not coming into the Dick LeBeau offense, which is notorious for rookies to pick up, might also help these guys, get onto the field.
Sorry. You've been watching too much soccer.
Yeah, I know. Get onto the field and actually make a difference, certainly does.
Yeah, so filling needs there. And then another lineman in round three and an O lineman in round four. But again, no, it's kind of odd here from the outside, if we don't get too much time from the UK to study college and all of these prospects, there's actually almost no names on here, apart from, I think, Burns, I did hear something about that really you heard about before the draft.
Yeah, so nothing jumps out there at me, I have to say. And I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Steelers do, because there's pressure on them and there's a level of expectation now that when Bell's going to come back, the offense should click. So it's now on their defense to help out that offense, because you feel that it's not going to be the offense which is going to hold them back this year.
Yeah, but the Ravens offense has been looking better with what's happened over the course of free agency and obviously Steve Smith coming back. But they've also added a real bonus to the line with Ronnie Stanley. Obviously caught up in that whole video Tunsil situation that they wiped him off the board and went Stanley. They obviously wanted a tackle, and Stanley's a great fit for them there. So all things looking up for that.
It's a Raven pick, if ever there was a Raven pick. I think it's you know, exactly the type of pick, and he'll be a star in the league for the next 10 years to come. Beyond that, there's no one that really jumps out. I mean, they had, what, 5 picks there in the fourth round? Again, nothing really jumps out
about there, but the second and third round picks, Korea and Kafusi, are much needed new injection of kind of strength, and with the likes of Suggs,
Dumerville,
aging and not quite what they were. So that was obviously a need area for them to strengthen that front, with potential players to come in and rush the quarterback. So the other little one standout, which is there's a couple of running backs that were a bit of a steal almost in this, the way that apart from Elliott and Henry, the kind of next wave of running backs dropped all the way to the fourth round or so before there was a little run. And they picked up Kenneth Dixon, who highly rated and could be a good fit for that offense. So they've got quite a few running backs there with Forsett and Buck Allen, but Forsett's getting on a bit, and Dixon could be a nice little fit there going forward in years two and beyond. So otherwise, that is the Ravens doing Raven stuff.
Yeah, and as much as the draft is important for them, they're going to go as far as Joe Flacco takes them, and how he comes back from his ACL last year.
Now, the Cleveland Browns, with the most picks in a draft since the NFL used to be a 12-round draft. Was it 13 or 14 in total, I believe?
14, was it?
Yeah, so they wanted an injection of a lot of youth across the board. They've cleared out some old guard. They wanted almost a fresh start. So they've got nearly somebody at every position. And overall, it's a nice idea. It's refreshing. And the key, though, is patience.
Yeah, and I listened to Sashi Brown on the Ross Tucker podcast. Yes. I think he's on PFT today, which we'll listen to tomorrow. I think it's what they've tried to talk about is that they're kind of looking for depth, at least initially. And what they've managed to do is set themselves up to potentially go get those blue chip talents moving forward. So again, and something that Mike Florio constantly goes on about, it's the more tickets you buy, the more chance you have of winning. Given the fact that you're probably going to be lucky if you hit on 50% of your draft.
Yeah.
If you draft more, then you should hit on more. I mean, the law of averages states that to be true. And I think the Cleveland Browns are in a position whereby staying where they were and drafting Carson Wentz, for example, was just no point. There was no real long-term benefit. You know, they are positioned to go up into the draft next year with two number ones, an extra number two, if they fall in love with someone next year. But let's see what RG3 does. Let's see what Cody Kessler does. I mean, I think the Cody Kessler pick was a little bit rich for me. I think they could have, you know, hung back and got him. He seems like he's an interesting kid in the sense of the difficulties that he came through. In terms of, I think someone on his lawn, you know, egging his car and all sorts of crazy stuff I'd read about. So,
I think, I mean, we've talked about this off air, but prior to this, the also thing about taking a Wentz or somebody, just when they've had Benjamin go, two linemen go, you're chucking in a guy like that to basically, he's on a path to failure when he's got nothing around him. So you can almost abuse and use Griffin. You can groom a Kessler or, as you say, move up and get somebody next year if there's a good guy coming out.
You know what? If RG3 works out, it's a bonus.
It's a win, yeah.
So the key to this, and I'm going to keep saying it, is Jimmy Haslam. As much as the draft, you know, and as much as you can talk about Brown and Di Podesta and Hugh Jackson, if the Cleveland Browns are going to probably finish 4 to 6 wins, they have to make sure that these guys get to use these picks that they're, you know, they're amounting. And you know, Sashi Brown talked about, you know, it's not something he can worry about and think about. He has to just do what he thinks is best. But, you know, let this one ride out and see where it gets them. Because when you look at the Jags, for example, and the patience that Shad Khan's shown, you know, the Jags are now the consensus, you know, buzz trendy pick of the AFC South.
So, yeah, that's, the Browns need a lot of time. But Griffin has a Baylor Bear to throw to in Corey Coleman. So, real dynamic player there for them that should step in and make some impact straight away. But that is the AFC North. If we go off down south and we start with the AFC South winners, the Texans, they also took a wide receiver in round one in Will Fuller. It's a perfect pick up for them, getting a wide receiver, give Hopkins a partner in crime to either take some coverage off him, or Fuller's going to be open a lot with all the coverage that goes to Hopkins. So.
Jalen Strong with his misdemeanor in the offseason. It doesn't look like that's going to work out, and I guess the way they've looked at it, Rick Smith has gone, with the rest of the staff at the Houston Texans, they've gone, well, we paid $18 million for a quarterback. We better give him the best potential chance of thriving. They've brought a guard in. They've got an additional running back. That defense was looking pretty good regardless.
Yeah.
So they look on the surface set up. I mean, again, it's what you've got in Osweiler, I guess, is the, realistically, we don't know.
They didn't have many picks, but they went first four all offense, and I mean, I think Nick Martin's a really underrated prospect, actually. Obviously, brother of Zach from the Cowboys, so he's a real bonus to add to that line.
And Braxton Miller is a loose cannon in the sense that, you know, he was a quarterback up until he's got 12 months ago, essentially.
He's got a huge top end potential. But at the same time, his floor is quite low at the same time.
Yeah.
But an interesting guy to work with. And, given Osweiler a few toys to play with.
And just to mention there about the nose tackle that they've drafted, clearly one eye on the big guy.
Vince.
From the Patriots, Vince Wilfork there. You know, this guy's talked about showing flashes within the Senior Bowl and bits and pieces, so you know, he might be in the rotation a little bit.
327 pounds. It's a big boy. So, moving on, the Colts.
Yep.
So we scroll down.
They drafted a lineman.
First round and the best, almost the only centre, and the best centre in the draft, yeah. Ryan Kelly.
I mean, DJ was raving about this on Move the Sticks I was listening to today. He said it was, a really solid pick and a guy that he'd been championing throughout the process.
Yeah, so that should be a straight starter there for them. Much needed, of course. And they took another lineman who heard quite a bit about because he's a big guy, a tackle, Clark, 6'5", 316 pounds. So another option there in the line to work with and develop. Went safety in round two, which again is where they needed some more work. But
yeah, and I think they're a team that's got more holes in it than you would, on the surface. And I think the problem is that you think, look, and you just go, yeah, they're fine, they're in solid hands. But the AFC South is beginning to be sneaky, potentially. And you're not going to stroll out of that division like they have the cakewalk that they've had in the last few years.
Yeah, you look around that whole team and you struggle to find other names that you think are Pro Bowlers or names that you just instantly hear about. You obviously got
who's
T.Y.
Who's he throwing to? Yeah, apart from Hilton, who's he throwing to?
That's it, really.
I mean, there's Dorsett from last year, potentially, if he comes on. They re-signed Dwayne Allen for, I think they overpaid him. Mm. They've let Kobe Fleener go out when he got a lot of money off the Saints.
And then really on the defensive side of the ball, you've got Levante David. Davis. And apart from that, you don't really have too much standout. So yeah, you say there's a lot of holes, but it always gets masked by the first name on the team sheet, Luck. So giving him a centre is a huge bonus for him, but we all don't know how he's going to come back physically from a kidney injury, so who knows. But yeah, the Colts are up against it this year with the way the Texans and the Jaguars have improved.
The buzzy pick, I think people are going to be already jumping on the bandwagon, and I guess rightly so, because they seemed well placed and they seem to have improve that defense at every single level.
All the talk is they've essentially got three first round players coming into their team this year, with obviously Fowler Jr. from last year, Ramsey, and then Miles Jack, who injury aside was graded in the top five in the draft overall. So an exceptional talent and hugely gifted athlete. Hopefully that gifted athleticism helps his knee to recover. The torque almost, it's a bit like Adrian Peterson, he's got that recovery process that if he needs to have an op or something done, that it can recover. But even if you only get this guy for 3 years and his knees fall apart,
a microfracture surgery isn't the killer that it once was. So you've got to remember, when you look around the league and you think about the top tight ends in the league, you think Gronkowski, you think Tyler Eifert, and I think Kelsey. Had microfracture surgery. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see what Clowney does a season removed from the microfracture surgery. So, it's not the killer it once was, and they must have been delighted to see him slide, because I was convinced that the Cowboys were going to take him, which we will touch on next week's
NFC. They obviously then had to just jump up as they saw Smith go. They thought obviously somebody else might want to take Miles Jack at that stage if they're taking the risk at that point. But then they addressed again a few more defensive options with a few big guys for the line to add to the roster / rotation there. Obviously, at this stage, a lot of these guys may not even make the final 53, but they also drafted a sixth-round quarterback to not really groom as a starter, but you might need a backup, as Chad Henne is backup there to Bortles. So all the talk is that they're the trendy pick, and you like their patience that Shad Khan showed, but almost, you don't need to see them win the division necessarily to.
But they've got to go 9-7.
They've got to improve. They've got to move forward.
Yeah.
In what's going to be a tough division when we think three teams have all improved, so all teams in this division are going to finish 9-7.
Yeah, and as everyone keeps rightly pointing out, not everyone can finish first.
No, not at all. Speaking of not finishing first, the Titans, who finished the opposite of first last year.
Wow.
And bottom, obviously gained those picks from moving around with the Rams, and then took a real player of need by moving back up to get Conklin, which seemed a huge cost.
This was a team that I got the impression got flummoxed by the Laramie Tunsil.
Yeah.
Because he was still on the board at the time. And I remember when they traded up, I was thinking, well, surely they're coming up for Tunsil. And then they picked him, and you were thinking, well, could they not have just...
Originally, they would sit at 15 and Conklin would be there because Tunsil and Stanley would go to lineman needy teams. The rest of the guys around 8, 9, 10 were all going to look maybe defensive side of the balls, the Giants and Bucks and Saints, and they could sit there at 15 and get Conklin probably.
Yeah, and Taylor Decker went at 16 to the Lions, and the talk was that there wasn't an awful lot of difference between those two.
Yeah, it's obviously maybe a bit fit-wise in terms of does it fit their what they want to do with their run game, but yeah, I guess they had picks to use in terms of it wasn't that costly. They still had a lot of picks in this draft, so they've taken a lot of players to work with and try and move forward with, but it did just seem a bit rich to move up from him. And the other real talking point more than anything is taking Derrick Henry in round two, running back who fits that style that they want to play there. But what a bit of a mess with having Murray added during the offseason.
Yeah, especially as we don't know what Murray we're getting. Mm. And Murray seems to be a back that thrives the more you feed him the ball.
Wait, isn't that the same for Henry? They both need touches and carries too.
And this is, I think, the issue that you've got. And obviously the problem that you've got with Henry is that he is clearly a two-down back. The talk is that he doesn't... Whether it's he lacks the appetite or whether the technique... these things tend to go hand-in-hand in terms of the blocking, which I think, hence the reason that people were waxing lyrical about Elliott as much as that, because that guy can, you know, has... the ability to block and get his face into the pass rush. So I just thought the Titans potentially overthought it a little bit. I liked the Dodd pick. You know, again, that seemed to be something that you could argue was, at the time, best player on the board for them. But yeah, the Derrick Henry one just seemed to be a little bit... And I understand that, you know, a running game is going to be important for Mariota going forward.
Yeah, but you feel like they've got enough players with Murray and the depth chart there that they can do something with that. You almost feel like, you know what, I'd almost rather them try and take somebody to catch the ball from Mariota there. That's not their strongest suit as well, but obviously it's scheme and style specific that Henry might have been a perfect match, just... They've got Murray. So.
And you know what? If it had been someone else apart from the Titans, and I think the Titans are getting a bad rap because you've also got a coach there that isn't exactly someone that, you know, you leaps off the page and goes, wow, you know, he's an enthralling, exciting guy. So
yeah. So that is the Titans.
Old Mikey boy.
And the AFC South. That just leaves us with the West. So I guess we should start with the winners of the West and our Super Bowl champions. and they addressed their quarterback situation. And everybody's talking about how Elway just knows what he's doing and picked up Paxton Lynch, moved up for him, much to Jerry's disappointment in Dallas.
That guy needs to know when to shut up. Yeah, I liked it because I think what he has done and what he seems very, very good at is putting a value on things and then sticking to it. You know, it would have been easy for him to bite the bullet and pay Kaepernick the $11 million. I think it would have been easy to bring in a Hoyer. I think it would have been easy to trade for Bradford now that Bradford's, you know, spitting his dummy out in Philadelphia. And I think he could have easily overpaid for Osweiler. And what he seems to have got is a, what people are talking about, and that remains to be seen, but a guy in Lynch that's got more upside than Osweiler and who's going to be for the next 5 years costing buttons.
Yeah. So he's got a good arm talent. He fits all the measurables for a quarterback. But you've got Sanchez there to be the placeholder in many ways.
And a guy that, after watching him on Hard Knocks and reading Collision Low Crosses, never came across for me as a guy that I would particularly want leading my quarterback room. The more and more I see him on TV at the moment, the more and more I'm impressed with how he's embraced, you know, Lynch coming into the building. And they were talking about, well, how do you mentor a guy that you're competing against? He's saying all the positive things. And you know, you can only go off what you see. And he definitely seems like a bit more of a reformed, wiser character than the guy that I remember in New York. And also, it strikes in polar opposites to what you're seeing in Philadelphia with Bradford signing essentially what was a one-year deal that was heavily weighted towards Philadelphia, and then spitting his dummy out once they go, well, you've signed a one-year deal and you're not the quarterback of the future.
That's either coming from just maturity from Sanchez, realising what he is, what he's not going to be, and playing his role, unlike Bradford. But then also, you come in as a quarterback to basically John's house. It's Elway's organisation, and what a guy to... He essentially is the leader of that quarterback room, I'm sure, in terms of how he manages these guys, and you're going to want to play for that man. So they've address the quarterback situation since the retirement of Manning and the moving on with Brock. And then they've gone kind of to replace Jackson there with a tackle, D-tackle in the middle, and then a safety in Simmons. But the nice little pickup is Devontae Booker as well.
Yeah, and they're talking about that he is now potentially the best running back on the roster. And, you know, they signed C.J. Anderson to what was a hefty contract because they... I mean, that's the only thing you could question Elway on, really, I would say, was that he put a value on C.J. Anderson, which was essentially a second-round tender, and then overpaid him a little bit because the Miami Dolphins came in. So that's the only thing you could potentially criticise him in. But the general consensus is that, you know, they have found a running back who is they're going to need, you know, to lean heavily on that running game.
They need numbers at that position, and Booker, by all accounts, fits that style of downhill and one cut through the Kubiak system. So nice pickup there as those few running backs went in round four with Dixon and Booker. And there's not really much else. They picked up another lineman for the offensive side of the ball. See if he makes a roster in McGovern. But overall, a good grade.
Yeah, it's again, there is certain teams and certain organisations that are gonna, if let's say for example Jerry Jones had traded up for Lynch, would we be giving Jones the pass?
No,
as much as, you know, in Denver that looks a perfect fit. In Dallas, you think, oh, they've drafted the guy for the future, but it's Dallas, they're going to screw it up.
Yeah, and it seems, apart from Aaron Rodgers is the exception, that they drafted a guy for the future in the first round just because he was way up on their board at that point for the Packers.
Well, by all accounts, the Packers didn't even do their due diligence on him. They didn't even expect him to be there at 26. So
if you talked about a Cowboys taking a guy in the first round, it's went, but you've got Romo. Yes, he's fragile, but they still keep talking about him. And 3-4 years, Jerry keeps going on about it. So it would be crazy to take a quarterback that high, unless you've got, you finished last and you've got unbelievable amount of picks to use on it.
Yeah.
So it suits the Broncos. They've done well out of this draft. If we stay up near there with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think my geography would say they're the closest team to Denver. I don't know. Anyway.
I think you're not wrong.
So they struggled. Obviously, no first round pick in terms of they even moved back, didn't they, to try and get a couple more, like fourth rounders. That was right from the Niners. They moved back out of the first round. That was right.
Yeah.
Niners moved up, so they got an extra.
Because they lost draft picks, didn't they, because of the tampering with Macklin, which was a disgrace, really, when you consider that they were hung out to dry when you're not telling me that every other team across the league is doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Again, it seems as if the NFL gets a bee in the bonnet about something and tries to make a team an example. When you almost think, well, could have been resolved without the need to take away draft picks and stuff.
So a second round pick was the highest they had, and then a couple of fourths, but they went with a big guy in the middle, Chris Jones, first of all. Obviously, Poe's coming into the final year of his contract. Talk is if they can't afford to keep him, maybe, that Jones might be a nice replacement in there. And they needed cornerback help, which they took in Russell and Murray after Smith has moved on. So fitting needs, whether they're overpaying to hit needs at those picks, it's hard to really say. But they drafted what they needed to.
Yeah, and again, Andy Reid seems to be a guy that does develop talent pretty well. You feel that they're close, but they are lacking a few wow players.
Yeah, maybe the wow comes from where is it? Tyreek Hill, wide receiver with a track star background, average football instincts, but as an athlete is an interesting one to watch there. So, and a couple wide receivers taken on that side of the board. So a speedy field stretcher in Robinson. So as you say, Reed might have a few toys to develop and work with.
Yeah, and I don't think they necessarily need to get tremendously expansive in what they do. They just need to be able to make those plays that they do make need to be probably a little bit bigger and a little bit more explosive. But, you know, they've got an interesting backfield. And again, you don't know how Charles fits into it now coming back, because they didn't really skip a beat with that running game last year when he was out.
They almost don't need him. So that's a nice problem to have, having three guys that can do a job.
And I tell you what, there's going to be people in that building that are thinking, if he can come back, trading them well, and getting some value moving into the season after, because the Kansas City Chiefs are going to potentially be close to the playoffs. They're going to be at least a solid 8-8 team, you would imagine. But they definitely feel like they need, you know, a few sort of wow players to hit on.
And in that division, they obviously came second last year, but the Raiders are the team that a lot of people, again, are talking about, the buzz teams are picking this division that are going to make a leap with, obviously, their guys from the last couple of years playing well in Mack and Carr and Cooper. They have now basically replaced Woodson with a safety in Carl Joseph, and They picked up a couple of DNs in rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah, and that front could be nasty when you consider that, you know, Mac's only going to become better. And they also put in another linebacker in free agency, who I'm struggling for the life of me.
And Irvin, is it Bruce Irvin came to?
Yeah, and he might play more of a pass rushing role than he was with the Seahawks. Alden Smith, potentially, you might get back back end of the year, although we've seen with... Well, Gordon seems to be an exception to the rule, because obviously there was a positive test floating around, but just because you're suspended for 12 months doesn't mean that you're going to be reinstated immediately. So,
although it does sound like Raiders are trying to help the kid out and be supportive for him, which hasn't always been the case with other players that have gone wayward. The Cook pick just seems a bit of an odd one. We all know Carr is their starter for years to come. It just kind of seems a bit... You talk about this, some teams have it's a bit rich to take a guy, you might want to groom and back up. But when Carr's still so young, it seems odd to be taking a guy at that stage.
Yeah, and whether it's McKenzie heavily influenced by his days in Green Bay, where you draft a quarterback and you develop them and you try and flip them and get something for them, that could be potentially it. But I think the Cowboys weren't expecting that, because I'm convinced that when they decided that, well, when they missed out on Lynch, that they were convinced that they were going to be able to pick up Cook.
Yeah. So... the Raiders are improving.
Sammy Ingram Chargers.
Across the board, the soon to be Las Vegas Raiders. But the Chargers, who are staying in San Diego for now, surprised many, and I don't think they even were hearing or caring anything about the Tunsil thing.
No, it didn't look like he was even somebody that was discussed, and obviously that, and I think my thought was, well, it's not Tunsil, it's Stanley.
Yeah.
And then Bosa came off the board, and it was like, whoa.
But again, he's one of the guys that probably 6 months or so ago, or the start of this last college season, Bosa was that highly rated five pick.
He's kind of high motor, high character, everything that you would dream about as a football player. Maybe lacks that real pure athleticism. Yeah. He seems to win quite a lot on the tape. The highlight clips, not the tape, that I've seen tends to be more effort sacks and effort pressures as opposed to sort of that real bend and explosive speed. But let's be honest, the Chargers weren't getting to anywhere near the quarterback over the last 2 or 3 years. So
despite having to root for a Buckeye, which I don't want to be doing, I really like that surprise and the way it unfolded, because the only person who's probably disappointed is Phil Rivers in not getting a first-round lineman. But they obviously lost that opportunity when they thought they were going to be maybe getting something for that pick and trading down to maybe get a lineman.
I mean, I think what they were hoping for is they were hoping to trade down with someone in the mid sort of teens, and then they could have picked up Conklin, and one of those guys and gotten some value and maybe gotten another second or third round for that. You can't argue with it. I think the Hunter Henry pick is a really, really sensible pick, and it was nice to see them drafting an O-line guy.
The centre was a revolving door last year in terms of player kept changing, injuries, and pressure up the middle was killing Rivers. But Turk, according to Mayock, is a real good pulling guard, so hopefully he can also be a real good bonus to the run game and Gordon.
Yeah.
And again, Henry, another good big tight end to play screen, but he's more of a Gates mold. So,
and again, you're coming to that window with Rivers where you feel that any time could be that drop off. Finding a stable offensive line, a little bit unlucky last year with injuries, but ultimately you're going to need Gordon to step up this year.
Yeah, and just another thing, picked a punter, love a punter pick in round six, but also got JJ's brother and Derek Watt, so love a fullback pick. As we enjoy a fullback adding to the offense, which if he can be utilized.
Yeah, and I think is that if anything that's going to help, you know, kick that running game into life can only be a positive thing for the Chargers, because you can't keep putting everything week in, week out on Rivers' shoulders, especially given I don't think his temperament is great for that. I think that almost, again, much like many quarterbacks, the less you can expose them, the more valuable they are.
Yeah, but the Chargers have done okay, and obviously surprised with the Bosa pick, and they felt they obviously didn't need Ramsey with their corners are not too bad. So going with Bosa should be interesting to see him try and get to Sanchez in the division this year if he's starting for the Broncos. So way over in the southwest of America, we finished off all the AFC teams. We've gone over an hour already, so as you say, we probably have to make this a two-part series.
Yeah, we might be able to squeeze one in tomorrow before I head back up north, maybe.
Yes, it was a surprise visit for Roger to come down this way, as he's got a week off. So just catching up and managed to put this podcast together.
It won't have recorded now, but...
Yeah, different technology required for the in-house side-by-side recording, so fingers crossed this will all come to you. We also have a couple of other little recordings that might appear at the end of this podcast, fingers crossed. If we're going to go to, we're going to stick with Anthony. He dropped a few of our guys in the Pipe and Slippers League a audio recording of himself. Vocally, I don't think he needs to be trying out for things like American Idol, Pop Idol.
Vocally challenged, I think, is the correct, political correct term.
Right, yes. He's obviously chosen the right career path to be not involved in singing and music, but a wonderful piece of audio that Anthony sent us, which we will round this podcast off in a minute. Anything else to add at this stage?
No, not really. I mean, it is what it is after the draft, isn't it? Yeah. You know, even the teams where you could argue and question their picks and some of their thought process, it's a time of year where it's optimism all round. And, you know, when we get to the NFC and we start talking about, you know, some of the other teams, you know, even for, you know, a Niners fan, you look and... You know, even though I think we've reached for that guard coming back into the first round, and it infuriates me that we've wasted picks. I get the logic, and I can buy into what they want to do. Again, Trent and Chip need time. So it is. It's all the beautiful thing about the NFL and the draft is it yearly brings optimism to all 32 teams, and anything seems possible at this point in time until your first round draft pick goes down without touching anybody on the opening day of rookie
minicamp. Gives you hope. You think the Niners overpaid for a guard, but you're now thinking about it a week later. Yes, we've got a guard to help.
Yeah, and our offense, and it's going to be great. We want to run that. You know, Kelly wants to run a power spread. You know, offense. He's the perfect pick. He was supposed to be the top. Guard in the draft. So, yeah, you can spin it whatever you want. I mean, as I say, I prefer to stay put and, you know, fill some holes. But this is the beautiful thing of the draft.
It is, and for me as a Chargers fan, we just mentioned it there that the Bosa was a surprise, and I was kind of a bit stunned by it at the time. I was almost thinking Ramsey was going to come then, or one of the tackles, and then. You picked Bosa, and I was a bit shocked and stunned by it, but now I'm thinking, it's what we needed. We're going to be sacking people left, right, and centre. It's going to be great.
Look at the Hackenberg thing with the Jets. You know, if this guy goes on in 2 or 3 years to become the Jets starting quarterback for the 10 years, they'll be talking about what an inspired pick and decision it was. You know, much to what Mike Florio was saying is, you know, analysing these drafts at this point is almost futile because these things play out over, you know, 5, 10 years.
Well, 2 years ago, we would be sitting here saying how exciting it was that the Browns took Manziel. They had some good and linemen and weapons for them at that stage. Yeah, and
they took the consensus number one corner as well.
Yeah.
How well set they are.
Well, 2 years later, they are still where they are, and they've had to reboot and rebuild again. Full of optimism. And
And don't be surprised, you know, come the end of next year where the good teams are still good and the bad teams are still bad. And as we say, no one can finish first.
It's not soccer ball after all, where one of the bad teams came through it all and won the Premier League this week.
Yes, congratulations to Leicester City, and a sad, sad indictment for those other teams that have spent copious amounts of millions.
When you have a partial financial regulation fair play thing, but there is no strict salary caps, there's no drafting process that makes it equal, that the worst team gets best players next year, that type of thing. The big clubs are meant to win it all each year, and for them not to do it is sad indictment in the state of affairs in Premier League. But Leicester have gone and done it. Almost a big shout out to Wyatt, who's named the Tinker Man after Claudio Ranieri, the Tinker Man himself, has won the title. So nice little segue there. And meshing together
it was actually a good segue, apart from the bottom finishes fourth, and that's the opposite of the top.
Yes. So, on that note, we shall leave you for our AFC draft recap. I am at Stephen Rudkin.
And I am at Roger M. Kirby. Please do not forget the M.
And this we will leave you with is Anthony's recording he sent to us. Enjoy.
This is my ode to Megatron. And I don't have Tony's plans and schemes. And I don't have Paul's hopes or dreams. I can't even eat Carolina gumbo. Since I don't have you. And I don't have Roger's body desires. And I don't have Stephen's coffee hours. I don't have anything since I don't have you, happiness, and I guess I never will again. When you walked out on me in walked all misery, and he's been here since then. Yep, my team's fucked. Megatron, how can I love again?
I've been sipping a tea.